Yo, what's up, everybody? Nicky
Nicky
T.
T.
Hold on, I got
Oh,
some
I got some
feedback.
feedback.
There we go. Nicky T, what's up, man? How you doing? All right. We're just waiting for a couple others here to get in the room. There's Anthony, AJC, Web Dev. What's up? Bringing you up here. There's Ishan. Let's bring him up. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Both invited.
Yo,
Welcome to JavaScript Jam Live. This is JavaScript Jam Live. We do this every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you're here, you're here at the right time. This is such a fun time. I love doing this on JavaScript Jam here. We talk about everything web dev and obviously JavaScript related, and more.
This
And
is my favorite meeting of the week.
there you go.
It's
This is my
even
favorite activity.
it's yeah, you know, like we even have a no meeting Wednesday
That's true.
internally, and this is on a Wednesday, but it's my favorite meeting because it's where I, you know, it's the one meeting I know I'm definitely is externally facing and interacts with, you know, people in the trenches on web development, whether beginner and expert. And I relish the opportunity. Sometimes when you can get very internally facing, and activities like this are hugely important for that. So that's one of the reasons I love this so much.
I didn't know you had a moratorium on Wednesday meetings. That means they must break that moratorium like once a month.
So, you know, we all work together. So Anthony has seen my calendar. The no meeting Wednesday never holds up. But
Well, just
this is the
people
meeting I
who
want to go
show
to.
up every week will notice you're here like, a couple weeks a month, not every week though. So
You know, I have a coworker who went on a staycation, and he showed up in like a couple of meetings that week. And you know, one of my coworkers was like, "What's going on?" He's like, "Well, I'm only going to the meetings I want because I'm on vacation." I was like, "That's the true definition of
I'm
luxury."
only going to the fun meetings.
Yes. So this is the fun meeting. And if I can't make it, I'm actually very disappointed. So, anyways, this is a fun time. Scott, I'll let you continue.
No worries. Good fun for sure. So yeah, like Ishan was saying, whether you're a beginner or whether you're advanced in your development journey, it doesn't matter. We love to hear from everybody here. And so if at any point you have something to say, feel free to request to come up. We'll bring you up. We love this kind of open mic atmosphere where we enable everybody to partake in the conversation, ask questions, make comments, statements, facts, opinions, whatever. We want to hear from you. So feel free to do that at any point in time. As you kind of noticed today, we're supposed to be talking about Strange Loop Conference here in St. Louis with Anthony and I, or where Anthony and I reside. And so that's kind of cool. And some other things, Bund and Rome and Biome. Anyway, but we'll get into those things here shortly. I do want to just go ahead and quickly make some intros. I believe we may have a couple of people joining us that are going to be speaking at Strange Loop. We will see. This was a little bit last second here, but it's fun either way. And we love to talk about events that we think are good for the dev community either way, so it doesn't really matter. And we want to really just help promote those things that benefit the developer community as much as possible. So, that's what we're all about here. We're about growing the developer community, empowering the developer community, and helping to grow the developer community. So, With that being said, my name is Scott Steinlogge, and I am a technical community manager at Edgio and co-host of this year's podcast. Who's up next?
You got Ishan.
I'm Ishan Nand. I'm VP of product for our Edgio applications platform, which combines security, performance, and call it headless or composable hosting for large enterprises and high-stakes websites.
And my name is Anthony Campolo. I am a developer advocate at Edgio. I host the FS Jam podcast, and I write our weekly newsletter, which I will pin to the top.
Yeah, for sure. And if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter yet, go to javascriptjam.com. Be sure to subscribe now so you don't miss out on any future amazing things that Anthony writes up. Because he's got some gravy things there. There's always some nasty, juicy bits that he puts in there. So don't miss out. Don't miss out. Awesome. So thank you so much for the intros there. we have someone in the crowd there cheering us on, it looks like, or at least Anthony.
Well, I am the best, so.
Yeah,
I'm Zava.
Absolutely.
I'm the Zava of JS Jam. Do you know who Zava is?
No. Tell me.
These guys do, apparently. We got two Ted Lasso fans out there.
Oh, Ted Lasso. Okay. Gotcha.
He's like this superstar player that they recruit onto the team, and he's kind of full of himself, but he's also actually the best, but he's also kind of chill, but he's also like really full of himself.
Sounds like an interesting character. Maybe goes back and forth a bit, huh?
Yeah, totally.
That's funny. Cool. So is it Udba? Maybe that's how you pronounce the name there. Apologies if I totally got that wrong, but feel free to come up if you'd like. Do you know anything about Strange Loop or any of that? Or Anthony, or anybody.
So
well, let's first open it by telling folks just a little bit about Strange Loop.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
This is. I'll just say this: like, it's a conference. Well, why don't you intro Strange Loop, and I'll give my little commentary, and we can go from there.
Sure, no problem. So we'll go with that first. Strange Loop. Yeah. So basically, kind of multifaceted conference. Bringing obviously developers and other people in the tech field together, such as like different languages and databases, distributed systems, security, et cetera, right? So all the things that we talk about on here, which is awesome. It was actually created back in 2009 and has been around for quite some time. And supposedly, I believe, if I'm not... if I hadn't read this incorrectly, I think this is their last year.
Yeah, so. I've heard the same. And actually, so yeah. I want to talk about this. So you've been saying how it's been around for a while. When I was first learning to code, like most people, I was on YouTube searching for things, and I would find conference talks from like all over the place, different eras, different places. And there was a handful of talks that I would see pop up again and again and again in the search results, and they had like very high views. And there would always be this like weird green infinity logo on every single one of them. And they're all talks from Strange Loop. And I'll link to one in particular called The Mess We're In by Joe Armstrong, the creator of Erlang. And these are like some of the best talks I'd ever seen. And like very, very clear and easy to follow. Rich Hickey has a whole bunch that are really famous. And even at the time, like, and they're about like really complicated subjects. Like, I would watch them, like Simple Made Easy by Rich Hickey. This is a really famous one. That's why, like, I would watch them, and you know, for like 10 minutes, I'd be like, okay, I get it. Like, wow, like learning so much. Then by like 20 minutes in, I'd be like, wait, I'm confused. Then by like 30 minutes, and I'd be like, I don't understand any of the words that are being said right now. And that was kind of how I felt watching most conference talks, but like the hooks would always get me because I'd be like, all right, yeah. We are in a mess with programming. What's the solution? The actor model? Okay.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Yeah, that what most people usually say in those moments, like, I understand the words you're saying, I just don't know what they mean together.
Right. Yes. That's good. Well, yeah, link that up there. And I'll go check that out for sure. And if you don't know what we're talking about, if you just scroll up when you're in here, you can see the top. We call it the Jumbotron, but it's linked there. And you can scroll back and forth when we link more stuff. So check it out. Yes. And so, as you can tell, Strange Loop has made an impact on the developer community just from hearing Anthony's little testimonial there. So, not planned, but no, I'm kidding. but yeah, so that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. But yeah, it's like this technology stew, right? Where interesting stuff happens and people from different areas are all in the same room and with a broad range of topics and things, and it's fun. So, and it's moderately priced for an event. So, pretty cool stuff that they're doing there. But that's kind of the gist of it. Ishana, you had a little bit
Yeah.
there, I think
Oh
you wanted
no,
to
I was
share.
gonna say, I've never had a chance, unfortunately, to attend. But I've seen some of the videos. I recognize, the name. It's been around for over a decade. And in this environment, we've seen, the macroeconomic environment, we saw some conferences either hold off or pause. But to see this one end, is sad and unfortunate. There's a Reddit thread that I posted. If you want to add it to the Jumbotron, I put it in the chat. Where people are like, why is it going away? It will be missed, but it's a great, collection of technology topics every year. If you look at this year's schedule, it's covering things from, security and programming languages. It's not just web and JavaScript. It really goes the full stack. AI, of course. But it was a really nice, brew of topics that has a real library of an audience that I'm sure will miss it. Unfortunately, if you're in the St. Louis area, though, I believe it's sold out at this point. Is that correct?
I think that's what I heard from Alex, who's the founder of it. But maybe he was mentioning, maybe he meant sponsors sold out and not the actual tickets. I don't know. You can still try, go to thestrangeloop.com and try and scoop you up some tickets there. And if you can't get it, then yeah, I think they'd be sold out. But you can give it a go. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was, one of the hopefully they'll be able to join one of the speakers who mentioned they might be able to attend as an interesting talk on AI without it's like called, let me see, I'll pull it back up so I don't butcher it. But without open data, there is no ethical machine learning, which I think is a really
So true. Oh
it's
my God.
yeah, it's actually an unappreciated topic, I feel, in
I've
the
been saying the
ecosystem.
same thing. I've been talking about this forever and how the fact that people aren't more up in arms about the like what data OpenAI was trained on versus like the model. Like people are mad that the model's open source. I'm like, no, that like the model is just a bunch of math. Like you need to know what data they
Right.
trained on.
Yeah,
Exactly.
this is like, oh, go ahead, Scott.
No, please. I was just saying exactly.
Yeah, this is like the next frontier. Like we've seen in the open AI ecosystem, right? You had an open model, but not the weights, and then you had the open model plus the weights, so you can execute inference on it. But we haven't got to, and then we had open model and weights and licensing, sort of.
It's open everything except what actually would allow a competitor to create a similar model, which is knowing what data it was trained on.
Exactly.
That's
Like
the
this
most
is
important secret sauce. Everyone knows it's a transformer.
exactly. And so this is like the last frontier, is this, open data area. And on there was a guest, I think, on the Latent Space podcast. I think he was saying, yeah, it's still a gap. The closest, I think it will be closed. There is a up here where I am in Seattle, there's a nonprofit, a true nonprofit AI institute called the Allen Institute for AI. And they recently announced they are going to build a truly open end-to-end
That's Microsoft.
Large language model. No, it's not Microsoft.
It's yes, it is.
Well,
So, Alan, wasn't he like the COO of Microsoft or
he
something?
was the co-founder. But he left.
So he, yeah, so
It is
yeah, exactly.
not.
That's what I'm saying.
It's Microsoft stock money, from many
Right.
decades ago.
Yeah.
But it is not officially associated with Microsoft. Now, there is a
Yeah,
flow of
just like
people
Jeffrey
from.
Epstein wasn't officially associated with MIT. It's
Well, no. It is. It's important because
the
they are a true nonprofit, and they're not. It's not like it's the Allen Institute of Computer Science inside or funded. Like it's technically a separate organization. Obviously, they're friendly with the rest of the AI
Because I
community.
remember they were doing a whole bunch of research on NLP not too long ago,
They
which
still
like
are.
obviously, and that obviously interfaces with Microsoft and their products and their roadmap.
Yes, but I mean the same is
I
true
guess
for a
when you
lot
got
of
friends, you
other.
got friends.
But nobody
But to
else
say
is.
he has no influence, that Microsoft would have no influence, I think is would be the incorrect statement, I think.
Yes,
Got it.
but they are truly a separate organization. They have a separate endowment. They don't take money. It's not like OpenAI. Not no shade against the situation, but they're paying. Microsoft is investing money in OpenAI in exchange for compute, right? It's a financial agreement. There is no financial tie between OpenAI and Allen Institute. Allen Institute is a separate, completely separate entity. It has a separate endowment, as far as I'm aware. So it's a truly separate nonprofit, if to make that clear. Now,
They should just decentralize
yeah, it's no, I don't want to say there's no relationship. Obviously, there are people, researchers who go back and forth, and they're friendlies with each other, but they're not like a. OpenAI and Microsoft have a commercial incentive with each other. Allen Institute AI does not. It was truly designed to be AI for the human good. And actually, they kicked off some of the large language learning model stuff with an early large language model called Elmo. And now what they said is,
I remember Elmo.
yeah,
That was like 2018.
they announced that they're going to work on a new truly open large language model, including the training data. And they actually just released some of that training data before they've released the model yet. But as they're building it, they're kind of releasing that as they go. That's probably the best hope I've seen on the horizon for a truly open large language model, end to end. But and I think it's really not enough people actually know about Olmo, which is what the name of the model is. But I think more will. Hopefully, in the next, coming months as it gets released sometime next year. Hopefully, if that speaker is able to join us, it'd be a great topic to talk to them more about.
But
Yeah.
yeah, totally.
So, I don't know if the and more on that, Anthony, you want to dive into, but or anything else on the Strange Loop agenda that jumped out at you. If not, we can jump to the newsletter this week or anything anybody has if they want to raise their hands.
You got anything, Scott? Anything else you wanted to say about the conference or like speakers or topics you want to highlight, anything like that?
Yeah. Let's see, where was he? There was a speaker, and he was, so let's see. Tried to find him. Oh, yes. So I hadn't heard of this, and that's just because I'm on a, under a rock sometimes when it comes to this development stuff here. The creator of Elm, Evan, I don't know if you've heard of that. But the, you know, a lot of people are like saying, you know, there's JavaScript, and then what was the thing that they compared Elm to? I'm trying to remember.
Haskell. It's like it's kind of like Haskell. It's kind of like a couple things. Yeah, I'm not sure what other language they
Yeah.
would compare it to aside from Haskell or.
Well, it was like the next level. It was like from this to this to Elm, right? And I can't think. But
Ew,
anyway,
interesting.
yeah.
Pure
I saw an
script.
article on it.
So what's
Yeah,
the,
no,
what arc are you
so it's
talking
like
about? Like, so.
TypeScript, you know, it's like from JavaScript to TypeScript to Elm. So someone was
Gotcha.
comparing those. It was interesting. The reason why I thought about it and brought it up is because there's so much hype around TypeScript, especially lately with DHH things and things. So yeah, I
Okay, I
was
think I
just,
found it by Kevin Lanthier. This thing.
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I know some people who are super into Elm. Lindsay Wardell. She like got a job specifically to write Elm.
Oh wow. Very into it then.
Yeah, it's for people who don't know, it's a functional front-end programming language that allows like ultimate front-end type safety, like even more so than JavaScript, which is why you hear it compared to like JavaScript, TypeScript to Elm. You get like no types, types that are kind of fragile because they're attached to like this whole compiler system, and then a programming language with actual like real strong typing. Do you ever use LME, Sean?
I have not. I hear about it. I hear people who use it and love it. But I have not used it personally myself. I did add actually to the thread, if you want to throw up on the Jumbotron, when Strange Loop announced that this will be the last Strange Loop,
So you have
their
the
tweet
ability
that was sent
to
out.
do that. You just gotta click the share button, and then it's gonna be the very top button to share post.
I thought I added it, but I guess I didn't.
Okay, you should get Ishan used to doing it himself, so he can share his own links.
Yeah,
So
there you
we're
go.
doing enough things up here
Oh,
already.
there it is. There we go. Okay.
Did it work? You're a big boy now.
So yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Last
Then they're
tip
gonna
though,
rename it
when you
again on
just
me.
drop a link, you want to put some text before it explaining what it is, because as you can see on the Jumbotron, you're just like, oh, actually, here, this is what
The
you want to do.
link,
You can
right.
just share actually that tweet itself like this. See? That's the move.
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you.
Yep. We're teaching Ishan how to host spaces right now. That's what
I
today is.
know. But you can see lots of people in there talking about they some people said it's the best conference I've ever been to. Lots of other
Yeah.
multiple people saying honestly one of the best conferences been to. So
Exactly. And since Anthony and I are local to St. Louis, and we probably want to keep the vibe rolling and going and building the dev community here in St. Louis, maybe we should just take over the event and help to keep it the fire
I think it would be
interactive.
a real shame if Strange Loop, the property, just died. I think that would really suck. I don't know if we're the right people to run a conference, but I don't know. We'll see. I think it's an interesting conversation.
Jam Loop 2024.
Maybe we'll take it up
Loop
with Alice.
Jam.
Loop
So,
Jam.
Loop Jam.
Oh my gosh. I just, you know what I hear in the background of my head right now? It's like, welcome to the Loop Jam. All right, all right. Throw your hands in the air. Come on, Space Jam, the movie.
Yeah. That's funny.
All right, y'all. Anyway.
Should we move on to the newsletter
Yeah,
this
so
week?
did you
Yeah,
read the
sorry.
newsletter this week, Isha? I'd be curious to get your take on it if you did.
Yes, I did. I thought the topic on Bond was very, very interesting. I thought your personal story about Lamb Dragon, I think it was called, was
Yep.
also really poignant and timely. So there was a lot in there that I think it'd be great to have you share.
Yeah, I
Maybe
got on
we
a
should,
roll with
yeah,
this
go ahead.
one
Yeah,
because
go ahead.
I had a lot of thoughts, and this is a topic I've had a lot of thoughts on for many years because I've been following both Rome and Bun since like each of them started. So I've been following Rome now for like 3 years and Bun for like two maybe. And yeah, so back up for people who haven't read it yet. There was kind of like two big items in the news that I kind of wanted to tie together. One was Bun 1.0 release, which a lot of people probably saw. There was a lot of hype, a lot of people posting stuff about it. And then Rome was officially sunsetted, and the code that was Rome is now biome. So it's like if you imagine Rome, you slot an I in there and then change the R to a B. The logos look very, very similar. It's kind of clever. It's fun.
Wait,
But
let's back up even
I was
a
gonna
few
say what
steps
I was about to
further.
explain what Rome is.
Let's explain what they are for people who don't know. Yeah, keep going.
So Rome was
Not
a
built in a day.
not built ever at all.
Oh, man. Too soon. Okay, keep going.
It was a venture-funded company created by the original creator of Babel, Sebastian. I always confuse the React Sebastian and the Babel Sebastian, so I'm not going to bother saying his last name. It's Sebastian, the creator of Babel. You can find him online. He was basically given VC funding to create this tool called Rome. And the point of Rome was to essentially solve JavaScript fatigue once and for all. And the way they would do this was, this is like even more low level than a meta framework. So right now we have all these meta frameworks, and that's like a big conversation right now. How do you add routing and server-side rendering and authentication and database access to a front-end framework? This was like, no, how do we replace like NodeMon and Jest and like Webpack? And it was meant to be a transpiler, a bundler, a linter, a test runner all together at the same time. That would be a single integrated tool. So when you're creating a JavaScript project, you wouldn't have to install all these different pieces and have all these different kind of like flaky components that are constantly changing and breaking each other. So, I think most people who are in JavaScript, they hear that pitch, and unless they're like absolutely insane and obsessed with configuring their tool set, they're probably like, that sounds great. That's exactly what I want. Why don't we have this yet? So obviously a lot of people are like, great, Rome sounds awesome. I'm super into this idea. Let's build Rome. And it struggled to do that because, that's a hard thing to build. It takes years, requires specific kind of user testing and feedback loops and cycles and whatnot. And they made the very poor choice of, once they finally finished creating the whole thing, instead of putting it out, regardless of how much it sucks and iterating on it, they decided, no, we need to rewrite the whole thing in a different language because it's not good enough. So they scrapped everything and then had to rewrite the whole thing. And then at a certain point, once they're like 2 years in, they had absolutely nothing. People started to talk and they're like, so is Rome dead? Like, officially? And I was having these conversations over a year ago with people, and I was telling people, I'm like, yeah, Rome's 100% dead. Any day now, you're gonna hear them make an announcement saying Rome, the company, is folded. Rome, the project is over. Like, full stop. I said this over a year ago. We're finally there. They finally kind of announced and gave up. So, and basically, like, what they had built was kind of dumped in this new repo with a new name. So, not a great story for the JavaScript community. It's not a great outcome. And there's lots and lots of lessons for lots and lots of people to learn. Thankfully, we have a very good counter example, which is Bund One. Bund One is, hey, an integrated JavaScript tool set with a bundler, transpiler, and test runner. How nice. Basically, Bun built Rome by himself with no funding and said, here you go, guys, I did it. And then they're like, all right, cool, let's give him money now to build a company. So this is the right way to do it. Like, you actually build something that people actually want, then there's at least something worth funding. You can't just say, hey, this kid's smart, he built some thing in the past, he has a cool idea, let's give him a bunch of money. Don't do that. That's a bad idea.
Sounds like a traditional VC thing. I don't
I don't know if it's a bad idea. I mean, it depends
I
what
think
your as a
in the
VC, your
context
investment
of
thesis is.
open source right now, I'm saying if you have a business plan, sure. Like, it's one thing to invest in a business plan. I'm not saying don't invest in like anything. I'm saying don't pick a random kid who had open source success who says he wants to build something and has no plan.
Okay, I don't know if he had no plan. We can debate the merits. We're also maybe later on, because it's worthwhile to talk about, Bun and your personal experience. I will say, like, We were also, this was during the height of, you know, we're now calling it the zero interest rate phenomena. I don't know if they truly had no plan, and you know, sometimes the element of, you know, the job and element of VC is kind of like, I'll call it like business research. You may not know all the ones that turn into successes, and I'll give you an example of the mental model. Is not did it fail? It's did I miss out on the big deal? Because the big deal, the ones that actually are runaway successes that are moonshots, are where you make most of your money. And so the biggest problem is the opportunity cost. So somebody asked Peter Thiel in an AMA in Reddit what the worst investment he ever made is. And he invests in a lot of companies. And he said, my worst investment was not doing the second round and follow-on rounds for Facebook. It was just double down on that one thing because that was the big investment. So it's missing the runaway success. And you know, we can get into that later, but you
But
know, there's
then
a method to that
it,
madness.
this is the problem. This is the problem. This is why people criticize VC, because then the open source community has to deal with the fallout of those failures.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that is the byproduct of. Another way of looking at this, though, is like there needs to be some failures, otherwise we're not pushing hard enough. Like,
Right, I'm not saying there should
yeah.
be failures. I'm saying the failures should be smaller, and like it should and should happen quicker. Like you fail sooner, faster, in less terrible ways.
Okay, that
Like
might be, yes.
they could have given him less funding to build something smaller, you know, and then iterate and then eventually get to the big vision, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Possible in hindsight, maybe you know the people got caught in a bidding war. You know,
It's
and
just because
again,
of having, it's
yeah.
because they're, once you have the open source cred, it's like, oh, I built Babel. So then they're like, all right, cool. Since he did this, that's like their, it's like the guy built a business in the past, he had built a business again. But the thing is, building Babel doesn't actually set you up to build Rome. It doesn't set you up to build a tool that's also a company. So I think they need to not pattern match one type of success onto another type of success.
Yes, but like I would say the bigger thing, like as a VC looking at this, is it's really hard to find actually anybody in open source who has turned open source into a business that gets big enough without one of the hyperscalers trying to steal it from you, like what's
Yeah,
happening to
I guess
Elastic,
my
right?
issue, yeah,
And
I guess my issue here is
yeah.
less that he got funding and more so that once the funding was there, it didn't actually function in a way that would serve both either the company or the open source project, in the sense that like they weren't like putting things out that people could really use and like iterate on, and they weren't really like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm still
I
trying to
don't know if
kind of
I don't know if I'd blame the VCs for that.
No, I'm not saying I'm blaming the VCs.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's the problem, is
Sorry for
because
interrupting
there's so
you
little transparency, I don't know who to blame right now. So,
there. Gotta put it on somebody. Come
Yeah. Maybe it's well, you
on.
know, in AI they talk about Moloch, right? Or an ethic, like it's like the collective incentives drive the bad outcome as opposed to any particular one person. It may be the system, it may be systemic, which may be a fair criticism, but I think we're way far off topic. Well, to a certain
No, it's
extent, because I
great.
think it's really important as it relates to the open source community has benefited from a lot of great tooling that is free, openly available, whether it's frameworks, whether it's the investment in like rewriting a bunch of tools in Rust or Go to be faster. And we've partially enjoyed that through, you know, funding that may have actually not, or in some cases did or did not turn into, you know, material outcomes, but like it turned into outcomes that benefited developers. We have these frameworks. We can take the code and use it. We're at least somewhere along the line. I feel like actually in some sense, there's probably we'll look back at the zero interest rate period and say there was actually a lot of great things there. Maybe we'll rediscover and have to re-implement them, or maybe somebody will take it and realize, oh, I can take this thing, and now is the right time to use it. It's just, you know, it hasn't been, it's buried treasure potentially out there. But
Yeah,
anyways, not.
I totally agree with all that. Yeah, so I think I know how to like pinpoint why this whole saga leaves a bad taste in my mouth,
Yeah.
because I don't feel like there was ever any sort of actual line of communication between anyone at Rome, either VCs or the people actually building it, and the so-called open source community they were building it for. So it was like there's all these promises that were made, and then things were built, and then there's not really a lot of communication around what the problem was and why the thing that they promised was never really fully built, and what the issues were, and how long it was going to take, and what was going on. And then it just felt like people were being kind of gaslit, like, hey, you got this really cool tool, it's coming any day now. Oh, you know, it's like, okay, well, when's it coming out? Oh, you know, any day now. And it was kind of like that. And it just kept going and going and going and going. And at a certain point, people were like, it's never coming, right, guys? And then at that point, they stopped, they weren't responding to anyone about anything, and they kind of just cut and run. So that's, I think, and that has nothing to do with the VCs. That has nothing to do with like this project getting funded and like getting created and all that. It's just like how it was actually executed just doesn't feel like it, like this was done in a responsible, ethical way.
Okay, so I'm actually empathetic to both sides of that. Like, I'm empathetic to the frustration of like, I've been there where there's like a project and you're like, oh, I'm really excited about this. Where's your Discord? How can I help? And they're like, well, we're not ready yet. And then it's really frustrating when that drags on. I'm also though empathetic to if you're on the inside and things for whatever reason aren't going the way you expected in either
But what do you
you
think you
know,
should do
the
in that
implementation.
situation? You should, don't you think you should be honest though with the community and be like, have be as transparent as possible?
Yes, ideally.
Yes,
It's,
exactly.
but it's
That's what
like
that's the mistake that I think
that
they
is. But
made.
I guess I'm saying empathetic to the emotional like coming to terms with
Yes.
that
Oh, sure.
internally.
Yeah.
Like it was probably hard. It's like the classic example I could use is working out, right? You know what you should do. It's just like hard to fit in logistically and whatever, like and emotionally want to do it. Like I'm sure it was just that was an issue. I think another thing though is you have a personal connection to somebody who was doing this without the benefit of that kind of funding and was like succeeding and like building something like, and I think that might also be leading to some frustration too.
Yeah, and I should say though, and I'll explain the backstory here. Aldo was like friends with Tom, and Tom was funding him. So it was like, I think that was smart though, because Tom was funding a single individual a small amount of money to like work on this project. You know, I thought, and that I thought was smart. You know, Aldo made a lot of mistakes too, but let's explain. So
Yeah,
I
let's
have
go back.
a previous great friend who unfortunately has passed on. His name is Aldo. He was a core contributor on Redwood, and actually, he's a very good friend of Matt Billman. They've known each other for a really long time. So he's like, you know, he was deep in the early Netlify crew, and he knew like people like Tom, and he was really excited about Redwood and wanted to, you know, work on it with us. He had a different thing he was building though. It eventually got renamed to Lamb Dragon. I think it was called Decoupled. But yeah, the Lambda Dragon, I should say. It's like a lambda and a little, you know, dragon. It's actually a lamb, not a dragon. It's a lamb dragon, but anyway, I digress. He was basically building another all-in-one integrated JavaScript tool that would be like the whole thing. It would be both the, you know, the bundler, the test runner, would be the front-end framework would be in there. There'd also be like and infrastructure as code stuff. So with him, he was really big into this idea he called pure code, which is that you could just have a project where it's only code in it, and you wouldn't need all these like dashboards and services and stuff like that. But I met him in like 2020 when things like Rome were starting to take off, and you know, every now and then we would talk about this project he was building. And he knew he kind of told that I was like interested in it. So I like big, cool moonshot kind of projects. I try and like, you know, rewrite paradigms and stuff like that. So I was very, I got what he was trying to do, and I thought it was very cool. And you know, I was just like I was in my boot camp at the time, and this dude, he'd been like, you know, a professional software engineer for like 20 years, like really, really knew his shit. And so, you know, the fact that he wanted to like talk to me about the project and share things about it with me, like it really meant a lot to me. And because he is, Aldo was highly, highly secretive, highly untrustworthy. Because he's, you'll know this, Ishan, old school people, software devs, they're like ain't no one seeing my company's code. No way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I
they're
mean,
like, they
there.
guard it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So
You're
he
not.
was
It's a
like
totally
that.
different world. People are.
Yeah.
It's like the exact opposite. It's a huge generational shift. Where like people are like, show me your open source repos, and they're like, what? And I come from that previous guard where it was very rare. It's something I think the web community kind of takes a little for granted. Like in other ecosystems, there's less of that. It's a lot better today, but yeah, certainly different
Yeah, it's pretty
world.
rare in
Keep going.
business for everyone to
Yeah.
share their business secrets with their competitors, for
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, so basically, like, after, every time we would like chat or he'd show me something, he'd be like, "Don't tell anyone about this." Would like the last thing he would say, you know? And, like, I know, Alden, I won't tell anyone about this. So, and then, so you know, he's working on this, and he'd already been working on it for like years. And at a certain point, you know, we're talking. And I mentioned Rome, and he didn't even know about it. He'd never even heard of it because he wasn't on Twitter. He had like quit Twitter. He was like this just like hermit dude who wouldn't like kind of engage the community. So he had no idea that in the time he had been heads down building this thing, a whole nother person presented the same idea, got funding for it, and had been building it for like a year. But it really fired him up. It got him super invigorated. See, all of a sudden he realized he wasn't just a dude in a cave with an idea. He realized other people understood this and the world had kind of caught on to it. So he got like super fired up by the fact that Rome existed. So eventually he did kind of release, he not release, he demoed it like once to Swix on a single stream. And he came on FS Jam and we did two interviews with him. And that's it. Like, that's all the content that will ever exist about this project because he then passed away in Hawaii in some sort of surfing accident or something like that. I don't really know the specific details. So, Lamb Dragon came to an end. But then, you know, Bun keeps going. And I'll be just really curious if, you know, I would love to know what he would have thought about Bun and, you know, how he would have kind of positioned Lamb Dragon against these other tools. So, unfortunately, that's like a branching fork of the multiverse I will never get to see. But yeah, so that's just why when I saw the Bun Rome thing happening and I tweeted about it like first. I tweeted basically making this whole thing that the entire post like in a single tweet. And it was very big response. It got like 30,000 views or something. So I could tell it kind of hit a nerve. And you know, like I said, I had kind of a personal story about it. So just kind of felt like sharing that. I've shared this in some interviews before, but I've never written about it.
Yeah, I don't know how to put it. It's like it. We sometimes look at certain developments as eventually inevitable, and it's in technology, it's this this tension between, I don't know, they call it like the great man theory of history, or it's movements, and here we see, I feel like a version of that where a bunch of people are trying to wrestle with the same idea. But we see kind of both sides of that in philosophically. We see the idea that it's movements and emergent, like we see multiple people wrestling with the same problem and realizing it's a problem that needs to be fixed. But then at the same time, we see how much the individual does matter, or individual circumstance. Unfortunately, sadly, Aldo passing away, we don't know what would have happened if that had not happened, and where that would have ended up, or the success Bun has had in execution, or versus the issues that Rome ran into in traction. So it's kind of like I look at it, and I hate to be like technology development and innovation terms. It's an illustration of both principles at work. I'm curious why you think it hit such a nerve, though. Is it simply because of the personal story?
Well, no. So when I say it hit a nerve, the tweet that I just linked to it did that didn't mention
Yeah.
Aldo or Lamb
Oh,
Dragon
okay.
at all. I said there's something very poetic about Bun hitting 1.0 the same week Rome finally collapsed.
Ah,
While no
okay.
one was paying attention, an entirely different person built essentially the exact tool that Rome promised to provide and set out to build in early 2020. The biggest difference was Jared lit his own savings on fire to do it instead of everyone else's.
Oh, I thought that was very compelling. Okay, that one definitely would hit a nerve. But like on the spectrum of polarizing statements on X, or Twitter, I think you're somewhere in the middle there. And maybe it was a too soon in the demise of Rome, or the transition of Rome to Community Project. But I mean, I think it's really valuable. Like when you look at that list of things that Bun replaces that you have in the newsletter,
Mind-boggling.
it's really mind-boggling. And it's kind of like the analogy I'd give you is it's like as a JavaScript developer, it's like being a fish in water and somebody finally tells you there's water around you. Like you've just gotten used to having to have all these other things
And that's
required.
actually
And
why I think I understood this as a beginner, even more so than
yes.
some professional devs, because I had to figure out all of these tools and then figure out which ones I had to use and then figure out how to put them together in a certain order.
Yes, exactly. And that's where I was going. Like, you know, we often hear about how, you know, it's hard for beginners to get started and they're not even sure. Like in the early days of React, you know, it wasn't even, you know, Create React App, but even that bundled like a bunch of five things for you, right? And it creates a huge amount of friction for people to get started. And if you've kind of like gradually grew up with these tools, so to speak, as a developer, it's hard to appreciate how much activation energy or like cliff or hill that somebody has to overcome just to get started. I highly encourage people to just look at that list in the Bun 1.0 or that we linked to in Anthony's newsletter this week. It's like, I mean, I should have counted them all. It's like 20, 30 different things that in total that it's going to just put together for you that are just batteries included. It definitely speaks to a pain point there in developer experience.
Another thing it does actually that I think is going to really be a game changer is because it is like the integrated bundler and transpiler is that allegedly, and this is, this is what they're saying, is like obviously this stuff never works as smooth as you'd want. You don't really have to worry about whether you have a J your file is JSTS, JSX, TSX, MJS, CJS, CTS and MTS. So like we have like eight file types to deal with now, and I absolutely hate this. So supposedly it deals with all of that. And also it can do both common JS and ESM and is Node compatible and web standard compatible. So essentially what they're saying is that it works with in everything in all situations, which obviously can't be true, but if that's true most of the time, that's just incredible. And like that will actually make me switch. That will make me use this on my day-to-day.
Yeah, it's so much, you know, potential value in here in DX. So hats off to well, I actually don't know who what's the name of the gentleman behind
Jared.
Bun, although I really Jared. I realize it's probably a whole team, but just
So
hats off for
yeah.
getting this off the
So
ground,
Jared,
man.
and so th and this is important. I think that this is part of the story and why I think they're worth comparing is that Jared was a man on a mission who for a year built this just through the sheer force of will on his own savings, like just coding 18 hours a day and built something that people were really excited about and wanted to get involved in. So I think that's cool. I think that would have actually served Sebastian better in the long run. He wouldn't have to use his own money. Someone would just fund him to like just do that. Like just go heads down, like build something. And then see like where you get,
Yeah, you know, I noticed Nick came up, so I'll give him a minute the stage in a second. But you were talking earlier about VCs, right? And one of the things VCs say is that like we want to fund somebody who's going to do it anyway, right? Regardless of whether you give them the money. And Jared literally just did
Yeah,
that.
exactly. Yeah.
So Nick,
What's up, Nikki T?
welcome to
You
the
got some bun
stage.
thoughts?
Yeah,
Nikki
what's
T?
up? What's up? Yeah, no. In regards to the compatibility with Bun, like the stuff I've been reading about, because I follow Matteo Colina, who's one of the Fastify
Yeah, I
guys.
was gonna say they have a couple asterisks in terms of there's specific things in Node they say they don't support. I guess that's like the one, but I think that's the only thing. It's like a handful of Node APIs, so that's an important asterisk to call out. So I think what you're about to do.
Yeah, there's stuff like that, or like if you have a module that does like top level await, I think it blows up. But like, you know, I'm sure the Bun folks are gonna sort that stuff out. The
Well, my question is, will anyone but Mateo encounter these issues?
Yeah, because yeah, it's true. He was kind of like, "Hey, I can't use Fastify or Pinot," but like they're moving pretty fast, so I think you know stuff they run into, it's gonna get sorted out. And I have a few. I'm curious about like folks contributing to the project, because like obviously not many people know Zig, which is what Bun's written in, you know, like so maybe there's a bit of a. I don't know how big the community is for Zig, you know. I don't think it's as big as Rust. I could be wrong about that, but
I'd say it's bigger than any other obscure language you've never heard of. I would say like you obviously it's not as big as Rust, but you'd be surprised. Actually, like, I hear people talk about Zig out in the community for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's less of an issue though, because so much of the internal Zig code for Bun is being written by Jared, and he needs everything else. He needs docs, examples. He needs people helping like that stuff, I
Yeah.
think.
Yeah, and the other thing, like, 'cause I know Vercel, they released you can bundle with Bun now, but they're not. I was reading, I forget where I was reading this, but you can't deploy with Bun yet because, or you could, but the benefits of Bun wouldn't be worth it currently because Bun isn't native in AWS, so you'd have to use a custom setup, and that slows things down. So it'd be interesting to see if like companies like AWS would like just make it native on Lambda.
We should do that, maybe, Ishan.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean,
Thinking
it's
about that.
because it's, I mean, everything else is based on V8, and Bun is based on the WebKit engine.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so
Which
it's
means, but
a
that means that's probably a bigger problem for Cloudflare than for us, though.
well, we'll that's a side topic. But it's clearly a it's a different environment. You know, all these benefits in the DX. But if you go the entire way through Bun stack, you know, the point here is that the bottom of it is a different I want to say runtime or architecture
Yeah.
than a lot of the ecosystem in JavaScript land has been built around, which has been largely dominated by V8, which was really the one of the first JIT you know and high performance JavaScript you know runtimes. But it will take the ecosystem some time to you know digest and evolve and adopt, but it seems like you know there's certainly he's done an amazing job here despite those you know those differences, and we'll see how that translates into adoption.
Are you
That is
building
an
stuff
interesting
with it?
point. I haven't really dug into it too much yet, honestly. I looked at it briefly like last year, and I was getting some seg faults, but that was like early days, so. But I'm definitely going to take it for a spin. You know, I think it's just exciting in general, like, you know, like that somebody's just pushing the envelope because, like, it's only going to make Node.js better. It's only going to make Dino better. You know, it's just pushing things forward, you know, and. The other things that are interesting too, like little if I sidebar first, not sidebar, but if I go on a tangent for a sec,
Yeah, as much time as you need, man. Go.
but you know how you were talking about Rome, and like the thing is, like for example, something like Dino has a formatter, it has a linter, you can even bundle with it, it's got a built-in test runner, so that's pretty neat. And even Node.js now, as of I think in Node 20, it's stable now, they have a test runner.
Yeah,
You
finally.
know, doesn't mean people are necessarily going to use it, but I would probably, because you know, because there's a lot of good DX in like Vitess and all those other runners, so I could maybe see them maybe under the hood starting to use the newer Node test runner potentially. But you know, it's just interesting to see like, you know, some of these things are super boring, which is maybe why I don't know. Rome seemed kind of interesting, but it's like at the end of the day, like Prettier is pretty good, to be honest. I know there's config hell, but like even Prettier has like minimal config, and you don't even have to create one, you know. And so it's, you know, and coming from other languages, all these things are built in. Like when I was doing C Sharp, it, you know, you compile, it formats, it's, you know, Go.
That's what's so frustrating though, is that we have this in other languages, so and we
Yeah.
should have it in JavaScript, and we never
Yeah.
have.
The thing I'm kind of bouncing around here, but getting back to Bun, like I'm curious what the debug story is because like for example, like if Dino's based off of V8 as well, and so like say you want to debug Node, you can open up your, you know, a Chromium-based browser and use the same debugger that you use for front end.
It uses the WebKit Inspector protocol.
Okay. Yeah,
I'll link to
so I
this.
imagine there's obviously going to be a language server like a lot of languages do now, so you can use it in the editors and stuff. But yeah.
Oh, they have a debug.bun.sh. They have a web-based debugger.
Okay. Because yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they actually, dude, you might dig this actually. This looks like they actually built something specifically as a playground on their website for debugging. I've never seen this
Oh,
before.
cool. Yeah, no, I'll definitely check it out. But yeah, I was just
Yeah,
curious.
just
Googling
for
it right
you,
now
Nikki
as well.
T. I know you love debugging.
Yeah, exactly. I do other things. I do other things aside from debugging, but yeah. But yeah, no, I think it's just exciting that, you know, people talk about the churn in JavaScript and like all kinds of stuff going on, but I'm still of the mindset like as a web dev, I think it's just like an amazing time to be alive. Like, you know, I definitely don't dread having to configure Webpack, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm just so excited, even just with the cloud, compared to where we were a long time ago. It's been hugely productive. There was something that came up in over the last week that I was surprised you didn't put in
You
the
talking about the
newsletter,
TypeScript
which,
thing?
yes, that's exactly where I'm
God.
going. Was
Because I
that
have
on the
no
cutting room
interest in
floor?
talking about
Okay.
it. Yeah, no, I mean,
For
I just feel like
maybe we
everyone
should
was talking
explain for people
about
who
it.
don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So
go ahead.
they took TypeScript out of Ruby on Rails to, they said Turbo 8, but I think that's part of Ruby on Rails, I believe. And yeah, I mean, David Heinemeier Hansson has talked about not liking TypeScript and things like that forever. He loves Ruby, which is a dynamic language like JavaScript. He wrote a message explaining why. He explained it very clearly in an actually not very inflammatory manner at all, I thought, especially by DHH standards. And so everyone lost their goddamn minds.
And they found aliens in Mexico, so
Yeah, I saw
might be
that
related.
Wait, what? I missed that.
too many aliens on showcase in Mexico.
Oh, they found an alien in Mexico. That's what you said.
So
That's funny.
do you believe that there's a it felt like we were like TypeScript was an unassailable freight train. Its adoption was only going up until
Nah, I've been
nine
saying
nine nine.
TypeScript already peaked. I've been saying that. I think we're on the downslope now.
Okay, we are. Okay, so
Well, I
what
think
is
that because it already won, and at this point, we're going to actually try and build types into JavaScript. I have no idea how long it's going to take or whether it's going to work well or not. But at a certain point, there's going to be a widespread acknowledgement that we have to stop this, and we need just JavaScript itself to work with types and just have it in the language. Like it's inevitable. I don't know how long it's going to take, but this can't be the end state. It just can't.
Got it. So kind of like what happened with CoffeeScript. Like we got all that
Yes.
stuff in JavaScript eventually because people were like, this is so good, and then it went away. Okay, so that's interesting. So there've been attempts before. I think Google's team proposed something they called Strong Script or Strong
Yeah,
JavaScript
no,
that
nothing in the
didn't.
past
Yeah.
matters because none of them had an actual serious competitor to go up against. So once,
What about
what
you
about
go ahead.
what? No, what were you saying?
JS doc, but I want to hear what you were going to
So
what you're
JS
saying
doc
first.
is also why I think TypeScript's on the way out, because both there's going to be efforts to build types into the language. There's also going to be efforts to have tooling that handles the types without having to actually like have it in with TypeScript with things like JS doc. So it's getting attacked from two different angles. But what was the thing we were just talking about before that?
Before bun or how far
No,
back?
just I lost my train of thought in a second. I was about to say something about types, that TypeScript,
Well,
and
the
oh,
types
because
proposal, you mean?
no shit, because Continue off of the thoughts, they'll come back to me.
Yeah, I think you were saying something around, it's been recognized that we need to have types in some form inside
Oh, I was going to
JavaScript,
say
one way or the other.
previous attempts at building types into language have failed because there was no existential threat to JavaScript. Like, TypeScript is an existential threat to JavaScript, the language, continuing to exist as an independent programming language.
Got it. Or looked at another way, rather than necessarily a threat, it's an existence proof of demand and interest. Like
Yeah,
the strongest
exactly.
indication that we need to solve this is how many people are on TypeScript. It's like, guys, like at a certain point, maybe you should build it into the language at this point.
We should have a
That makes
poll
sense.
on that.
That's not a
Do
bad
it.
idea.
Make a poll, Scott.
So I guess it's you didn't want to bother talking about it because it not because you disagree with it, but you're already convinced that we're at peak TypeScript,
Well, I
and you
mean,
feel like it was just part of a yeah, go ahead.
I just didn't feel like I would have had a lot to say, and especially because, well, one, I agree with DHHH, and no one wants to hear that, so I didn't really have to make that case and put myself out as a defender of DHH. So it's kind of like it's more of a tactical decision than anything.
Got it. Okay.
You know, something
Yeah,
I was
go
thinking
ahead.
about. So just speaking of like polls, real quick. So I ran a poll. I don't even think we did discuss it unless you guys talked about it when I was out, like last week or the week before, whenever that was. But I had said like, hey, like the age old like thing, like vanilla versus a framework, right? And it was like, okay, look, frameworks come and go, but the beauty of vanilla JS, timeless, just like your grandma's cookie recipe. Anyway, but I said put in your vote on this age old question. So learn vanilla or go with a framework and learn along the way. And I was actually very surprised by the results because I thought a lot of people were going to go with framework because how many people nowadays like have just started with like React or something like that, right? Like Anthony, you did that, right? And many other people too, I'm sure, like
I
some other
think, I
framework.
mean, yeah, I did, but I think even people who did that, like me, came out of it saying, I wish that I hadn't been like that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I don't know. And there's a lot of people just saying, hey, look, like, just go with a framework because it's just so much, like, you don't have to do as much work, right? It's necessarily, it's like, you know, like Redwood, you know, it's all, you know, built in there, right? And it's like, so anyway, but I was pretty surprised. Like, there was almost 30 votes on here, 29. 82% of people, 82.8%. Of people said learn vanilla, and only 17.2% said framework. So, kind of interesting. I
Inter
just think,
yeah. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think it correlates a little bit, kind of like it's like, yeah, it's a little bit different, but TypeScript is still like you said though, Anthony, like
No, I think you're onto something. I
none
think
of
you're
these
onto
frameworks
something
are gonna
there.
take JavaScript out of business, right, per se. But you know, TypeScript, on the other hand, is a whole nother thing. You know, I don't
Yeah. No,
I
sorry, go. You go.
Oh, go
Oh, you
ahead.
go ahead, Shannon. I'll go after.
No, you
Okay.
first. I always want to hear what other people have to say.
Yeah, I think like even though like I'm super excited that like to be a web dev these days, there's like so much great tooling and stuff. Like, if somebody new coming into the space, it's pretty intimidating. But you know, because there's just all this tooling. Like, you know, even if it's in the framework and stuff, you know, like you might not know you. A lot, because a lot of web devs that I've met in more recent years, like because I speak to a lot of like early career devs, you know, their introduction to web development is React, you know, and a lot of they don't necessarily think that React is like built into the browser, but like you know, it's there's a disconnect between like what actually gets rendered and stuff. But my point though is like, whether you go vanilla or a framework or you jump into whatever, I think the important thing is just to build stuff. And I had this conversation with Austin Gill when he was on my stream. Because the thing is, you know, if you don't start with fundamentals and you go with a framework, and you build something, at some point you're going to get stuck. Like, I don't know how a RAID op map works, you know, when you're like looping over like some components or something. So you're going to dig into the fundamental stuff. If you start with vanilla and then you're like, then you go to like a framework and you're like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, either way, I think you're still going to learn. And I think it's just more important to build something. Like, that's the essence of why I always loved web development. Like from the early days, you know, like just literally FTPing like an index HTML file with some JavaScript and you see it instantly. So I think just building is super important regardless of where you're at.
Yeah, and like building, like you said, though, I mean, I think you're very on point there because, like, when you start building, you're going to run into things where you're going to need to discover something more about vanilla and to understand the process, to be able to learn more, to be able to get to the next step of whatever you're trying to accomplish. Maybe not in like a very basic profile, like build out, you know, or something like that, but, you know, something more in advanced that you start to do, you know, may require the understanding of the foundation of vanilla, you know, versus, you know, knowing what's rendering or whatnot. So, yeah, I think you're on point there. Like, as you build, you will grow, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And the other thing I was going to say is about TypeScript. Like, I've been working with TypeScript since 2015, and TypeScript's actually been around since 2012. And like the thing with it is, like, when I first started using it, I was at like a Microsoft shop. So I was using Visual Studio Code like 1.0. I don't know when people started using Visual Studio Code, but Visual Studio Code literally used to be just an editor. There was no extensions. There was nothing. It's literally just, we used it because it's what had TypeScript support. And the interesting thing about TypeScript is, because like front-end devs are like, oh wow, like I can go to definition and I can like do all these things. And these are things that have, because like I did a lot of C Sharp before, and like these are all things that have been in Visual Studio and any kind of, they're typically object-oriented enterprise-grade languages that have these things. Like, you know, if you use Net, I forget what it is for Java, the IntelliJ and stuff, all those things exist. And you know, TypeScript has the types, but it's also like a huge chunk of TypeScript is actually tooling. You know, go to definition, rename this variable, and then it changes it everywhere. So it's like, and the thing I always say to people, when I hear about people saying they don't like TypeScript, always makes me laugh, because if you're in Visual Studio Code and you're just using JavaScript, it's still using TypeScript under the hood. That's how you get the IntelliSense from the you know, the DOM APIs. It's pulling in types still and stuff. It's giving you all that IntelliSense and refactoring. So I see TypeScript really as like, a lot of it is really tooling to just make your developer experience better. There is the types as well, obviously. So it's just kind of just interesting to see where it goes. But like, I think you, a lot of what TypeScript drives these days is really tooling, and the types are there too. But I just wanted to mention that.
All right, cool. I think that's gonna about close it out for us. Thanks so much for hopping up, Nick. Appreciate your bun thoughts, your TypeScript thoughts. I know you're someone who's been doing TypeScript for a long time, and I will say I don't think TypeScript itself is going away. I think TypeScript will be around forever, but I think that at a certain point, JavaScript is going to admit it has to have its own solution for this problem, you know. Anyway, you want to close out, Scott?
Yeah, awesome. Hey, thank you all so much for joining us. If you got any value from anybody up here on stage, please be sure to follow them if you're already not, and I'm sure you already are if you're in this room, it looks like, for the most part. So thank you all so much for joining us today. Remember, as always, you can feel free to come up too. You know, Nick just requested and we brought him on up, no problemo, even though we know Nick and he's our homie. But you know what? If you are not our homie, you could become one. So just hang out with us, come on up here. Have a good time next time. Also, if you're not already subscribed to JavaScriptJam.com, go to JavaScriptJam.com. Subscribe to our newsletter that Anthony puts out every single week and has a lot of these topics in them that we discuss on Wednesdays. So be sure to do that. Don't want to miss out on the latest and greatest in JavaScript and web development. With that being said, thank you all so much for joining us today. Had some awesome conversation about Strange Loop. If you don't already have a ticket, I think they may be sold out, but you may be able to sneak in the door. Go to strangeloop.com, check it out.
And the talks end up online as well, so check those out.
Yeah, yeah, and the talks will probably end up online. But yeah, thestrangeloop.com. Sorry, it's not strangeloop.com. It's thestrangeloop.com. Go check that out for more. And if you're in the St. Louis area around that time frame, hit up Anthony and I. Maybe we can hang out or something. I don't know. But yeah, be sure to check it out. All right, y'all. Thank you so much. It's been a blast. Thank you, Nick, for coming up and hanging out. Thank you to everybody else in the audience there for hanging out. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. And we'll see you in the next one. All right. Thanks, y'all. Love you. See you in the next one.